This episode is brought to you by Netflix. Hold your carriage horses and tighten those corsets. Bridgerton is back. Longtime friends Colin Bridgerton and Penelope Featherington find themselves in quite the precarious situation. The wallflower is ready to bloom, but she needs Colin's help to find a marriage match. Has Penelope truly pushed aside her feelings for Colin? Will Colin realize his feelings before another suitor takes Penelope's hand? And will Penelope's secret identity as famed gossip writer Lady Whistledown destroy any chance she may have at love? This gentle reader can't wait to find out. Watch part one of Bridgerton now, only on Netflix.
A quick note before we get into the episode. Oversharing is a podcast for entertainment purposes only. It is not a medical podcast and does not constitute medical or psychological advice. Always seek the advice of your physician or mental health professional. Hello, and welcome back to Oversharing. I'm Jordana Abraham.
And I'm Dr. Naomi Bernstein.
What's up? Happy Passover.
Happy Passover. So many things to start with. We had a delayed recording. First of all, I went on another show without you.
What?
I went on.
I wasn't invited.
You were not invited. I went on Sirius Doctor Radio, and it was a great. You know, we talked about the ick, that article that I contributed to for the ick. It was a really interesting talk, but I will say that it left me really appreciating you. Like, I just felt like sometimes I take for granted like the ease of interaction. And like when I lay something down, you pick it right up. And it's so I wanted to share that with you.
Of course. I definitely value our chemistry too. That's a thing with like podcasting or hosting or something. It is like, you know, you have your own show, but then when you go on someone else's, it's a little nerve wracking because you're like, I don't know if they're going to like get me or like the rhythm's going to be there.
Yes. Well, the funny thing is, like, I wasn't nervous because I was just like thinking it was going to be just like this. And then I was like, oh, wow. Like, it's not always like this. Like, everyone has their own vibe. Right. So,
not everyone is as incredible as I am.
No, they're not. And you know what? The other thing that was weird was like, it was a radio show. So, I guess because of that, they weren't on camera. And I was just talking about this. It's really hard, I feel like, to connect to someone in the same way without seeing their facial expressions and like having a little gesture, a little movement, a little something. So it was all audio.
Oh, totally.
So it felt like a little bit like a disconnect.
I mean, it makes you, I guess, have some appreciation for like back in the day, you might do like a phone date before,
yes,
you know, before there was FaceTime with someone before you met them. And I can imagine the vibe being not great.
Right. Yeah. Or even, I think it's almost different. This is weird. And maybe it doesn't make sense. Like when I'm looking at a screen, I'm either looking at myself,
right,
or I'm looking at nothing. Like if I was like laying on the couch with my legs kicked up with my old school, like clear phone where you could see all the wires, right, like I'm aging myself right now, but like then it's kind of comfy. I'm like staring up at the ceiling and I'm on the phone. But when I'm looking at a screen and it's like nothing there but my own face staring back at me, it was not quite the same. So long story short, I appreciate you. I appreciate our dynamic.
Same. I'm glad you got a taste of what else is out there so that you know.
Yes. Yeah, totally. I'm always coming back for you, Jojo. Yeah,
I appreciate that. So, and how was the Seder? I didn't come last night.
Yes, we missed you. I don't know what you did. It was a good time, you know, ruckus and, you know, craziness, but it was fun.
Is everyone gone?
Yeah, everyone's gone. The kids are sad. We had guests for a while, so that was a good time. I always like having a full house, so that was really fun. And then it is a little bit like, oh, it's so quiet after everybody leaves, but
right. Well, it's like we said, guests are like fish. After three days, they start to stink.
Yeah, so it was 2 days. So it was like perfect.
Perfect.
It was like 2 days and then they left, leaving us wanting more, which was nice.
Two, you miss them. That's great. I love it.
The Seder was good. We had Josh added in a little Taylor Swift lyric from her new album to spice things up.
Very creative. I went to our other brother Adam's house and he did not add in any Taylor Swift lyrics. So FOMO.
Yeah. Can we talk about it for a minute? The new Taylor Swift album?
Yeah, I I don't know if I'm like the most prepared of anyone out there. I listened to like a few songs. I wasn't like fully like in the zone. They kind of just put them on in like a background, but I have a sense of the album. What was your thought?
You know, it was interesting. My thought, I was listening to it and a couple songs and I was kind of getting the urge to like skip. And I almost felt exactly. I almost felt like, you know, like as a mom, like when your kid brings home like some artwork and you're like, eh, this one could probably go in the trash.
I've seen you better.
Like a little guilty, a little like, can I skip this song? Like, am I not going to listen to every lyric and try to understand deeply how Taylor was feeling when she wrote this? Like, I'm just going to.
Right. Well, you can be pro Taylor and not be a fan of every single thing she does.
Right.
Despite what the internet might think.
Yeah. I mean, there were a few songs I really liked. So Long London is my favorite. But there was, and she's a beautiful poet. And her lyrics are
great lyricist. Yeah.
Yes. The music wasn't bringing me in on as many songs as I would have hoped.
It's okay. You can say it. You hated it.
I can say it.
It's all right. Well, it's a safe place.
It's funny. It does.
I'll be your therapist. Yes.
It does kind of feel like a little bit, you know, there's like a, when you're a big fan and then. It's almost like the same thing with the kids. Like I get their school pictures and I'm like, I don't really want to order these. Right. They don't look that cute here. Like,
well, that's good. You have, it's,
do
that's
I
called
an
taste.
8x10? Yeah. Right.
That's called taste. Right. And I know I actually read, I think the album from what I've seen like headlines and maybe skimmed an article is that like, it's not getting the best reviews of all of her albums. It's right. Like I read a different article that was like, is there a little bit of like Taylor fatigue,
right?
Because
right.
She has been everywhere sort of especially last year, but this year too,
so much content. And her songs are beautiful, but it was almost like, and it's fine because she can do whatever she wants, like it seemed like she was just putting out what she felt like putting out. Like she wasn't really thinking, I think she's beyond the point maybe of thinking like, are people going to really like this? Or like, is everyone going to go crazy for this? She's like, this is what I wrote. This was a moment in my life. And this is the mood that I was in. And so I just kind of released all these songs and everyone loves me enough that they're all going to love it. And it was, every song is amazing and a bajillion times better than anything I could ever write. But musically, I was looking for something a little more.
I mean, look, not every single album is going to be your best album. It just can't. You know, I'm proud of Taylor for not being such a perfectionist that she feels that she can give us a subpar album.
It was like, she just put out whatever she was feeling. Like, I'm just going to write this. And if you like it, great. And if not, no problem. Like, I'm still queen.
Well, what do you think about the idea, I guess, to make this more about Taylor and maybe more of the listeners of like using your pain in your art or like finding a creative outlet for your like emotions, processing your emotions, in her case, processing this breakup, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it was. That's what it was. So it was a little bit, it wasn't like her angry 20-year-old Red album where it was like a lot of like passion, you know, like young passion, hate, you know, bitter stuff. It was a little bit more like just her, mature. It was like a musical journal that she was sharing with the world. And I'm all for it. Do it. But I don't know that I'm going to sit and listen to it in the car. A few songs. I have like maybe 3 or 4 songs that I really like.
That's a good amount, I think, of songs to really like from an album. I usually three or four. You're like, well, maybe 1 or 2.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say really, I really like 1. I like 2 or 3 others. And the rest are like fine.
What's your favorite Taylor album?
Believe it or not, probably Folklore or Evermore. I like the deep stuff. Like, it's not like I don't like the slow, deep Taylor Swift stuff. Like, I love that stuff. But it was like, if it wasn't Taylor Swift, I don't think that many people would be listening to this entire album. And like,
right. If it was a rando that released it, no one would ever hear it.
Right. Cause you're so curious. What did she mean by that? Is that one about Travis Kelce? Like, oh, that one's about Kim Kardashian. Like, oh, you know what?
Right. Well, it makes you also think if she was super, super private about her personal life, like if you didn't know anything about her, would she be as big as she is now?
Well, she's a genius. She's a genius because she knows what people want, which is a little bit of a chase, like a little bit of seeking. She'll give you these little Easter eggs and then you're like hunting for the Easter eggs, which keeps you engaged in the album. She gives us just enough about her personal life that we know, or just enough for the Swifties to like figure it out and then tell everybody else what they know. And then we're kind of like, all right, we think we know, but if we listen to the album, like you're a little bit of a detective too, which makes it fun. So it's a whole experience, an obsession over this one person and her life, which is, you know, not really relevant to most people, but
feat for her to do. Yeah. I mean, one subpar album is fine. Two.
This is my personal.
I've heard this, this view echoed again around the internet. Like some semblance of like this is maybe not the best album she's ever had.
Right. And it's almost like, you know, people are probably in hiding, not wanting to admit that they didn't. It's almost like if, you know, dare I say it, if you're like a Trump supporter and you're like have to be like kind of in hiding.
Right.
Like you can't really come out and say it. If you don't like the Taylor Swift album, you have to kind of hint at it.
You're leaving little hints that you, that you hate it, which is okay. Right. But yeah. I mean, listen, like as people who create content, we create content. I create a lot of content on a lot of shows. Not every episode is going to be your best episode. It just can't be. Like that's just not like possible. So sometimes you put out an episode. Was it the most insightful, best thing you've ever said? No. But like, did it entertain some people? Hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you try to make do as well as you can at every stage. So.
Totally. Agree. All right. There's my Taylor Swift take. I do still love her. And she is still like.
Wildly talented.
I agree. But I needed a little more juice in this one that I was missing.
It's okay. If you're looking for simple but quality products for your 5-minute makeup routine, or you want full-faced glam that'll stun on a night out, Thrive Cosmetics has a full line of makeup to refresh your everyday look. Thrive Cosmetics beauty products are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free. Made with clean, skin-loving ingredients, high-performance and trademark formulas, and uncompromising standards. It's easy to see why their bestsellers have thousands of 5-star reviews. One of my favorite things about my Thrive products, and I love the mascara. I wear it on every single recording I have because it looks like I'm wearing eyelash extensions, but I'm not. I also love that Thrive Cosmetics supports communities that I care about. I also love Thrive's new Brilliant Eye Brightener. It's a highlighter stick made to brighten and open your eyes, giving you an instant eye lift. Just apply to the inner corner of your eyes to look rested and effortless. You can use it as an eyeshadow for a perfect daytime glow or use the metallic shades for an easy smoky eye. The foolproof formula makes it extremely easy to apply and blend any of the 16 shades. Perfect for 5-minute makeup or full face glam. Refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics. Luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/oversharing. That's thrivecosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/oversharing for 10% off your first order.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Let's get into our show. And guys, if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can call 646-363-6294. Or if you have an email you want to send in, maybe you wildly disagree with Dr. Naomi's take and you think this is a, you know, a record for the ages, or you know, you want to say something tasteful but critical or nice, You can email us at oversharing@betches.com and be nice. And, you know, we will and, might take your feedback.
And don't forget to be nice.
Exactly. Just as we are most of the time. Okay. Let's do our overshare. I will read our first one. Dear Dr. Naomi and Jordana, I love the pod and I really appreciate the advice you give your listeners. I've been thinking about this one for a while and I'd really love some help. In 2021, I broke up with my ex who was cheating on me. We were together for 4 years, and as it does for most of us, it totally took me by surprise and wrecked me. Over the last few years, I've really done a lot of introspection, therapy, and work on building up my confidence after dealing with some serious betrayal. For the last 6 months, I've been seeing someone new, and I really like him. Things have been going well, and there's never been any indication that I would have to worry about him cheating. But every once in a while, when he's taking longer to respond, I hear this tiny voice in my head that says, "You should drive past his house to see if he's there." I know this crazy impulsive voice is just trying to protect me from experiencing betrayal again, and I would never act on that impulse. My rational brain always reminds me that he's totally allowed to be busy and not text me back every second of the day, obviously. My question is, how do I politely tell that crazy impulsive voice to shut the fuck up? And furthermore, how do I not let my past experience with betrayal not affect every future relationship moving forward? I've told my new beau about what I experienced in my last relationship, and he's been very understanding and open to talking about it. He reassures me by saying that he would never do anything to lose my trust, and I'm sure he doesn't like to be compared to my ex, rightfully so. So how do I blindly trust that he won't cheat? And furthermore, how do I trust myself that I've chosen a partner who won't cheat? Any tips you have would be greatly appreciated. Sincerely, bitter and betrayed Betch.
All right. Yeah. This is a common question. Like, how do you not turn psycho after you've been cheated on and become a detective? And I think the hardest part is balancing knowing like when to bring it up and communicate and like get the support you need from your partner and when that's going to become tiresome and like annoying.
Right. Because no one wants to feel like they're paying for someone else's fuck up.
Yeah. So I think, you know, for in this situation, she's very, which is great. She has returned to consciousness. She has brought like an awareness of her, that her mind is separate than herself. Like she's brought this awareness of like, there's this voice in my head that is not me. It's like my traumatic experience and my mind trying to protect me from experiencing that trauma again. By telling her she should drive by his house, whatever it is. So first step, great. You're aware that there's this voice. And what I always try to say for myself, and I tell my patients a lot, is like to kind of like recognize this voice outside of yourself and say, thank you for trying to protect me, but I'm okay. I know he loves me. Or like, you know, bring up some type of evidence that you have in your life that this person is... Mm-hmm. You know, in some way, someone that you can trust or someone that, you know, is faithful or whatever it is. And if you can pre-prepare that, that's great. Or just thank you for trying to protect me, but I'm okay. Where you're noticing the voice, I think sometimes what happens, maybe for her, is like just the existence of this voice feels like, oh, I'm not over it, or I can't let go, or
I
like
should be
I'm
suspicious
still,
too.
Yeah, yeah. Or like maybe this is trying to tell me something, or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe there is something to worry about here. So I think if you can just allow that voice to kind of be like a passing cloud in the sky and just notice it. Oh, there it is. You don't have to ignore it, but you can be like, oh, there it is. And I'm just going to, you know, kind of come back to where I was, if it's persisting, right? If you're trying to kind of do the thing, one, where you're not judging yourself and saying like, oh my God, you're not over this. Like you're never going to trust again. This thing keeps like judging the fact that you're having these thoughts probably could make them worse.
Right.
Make you feel worse. So if you're, you know, trying your best to just notice these thoughts and kind of let them pass through and tell, thank you for trying to protect me. And that's not working and you keep continuously feeling anxious, then like giving a few days or like a week or something like that, and this technique is not working and maybe you're practicing mindfulness and that's not helping. And then I think you could bring it up to your significant other and get soothed by his ability to communicate. So that's an important, the second piece that I think is important is like, typically cheating happens in couples where there's like a, there's a breakdown in communication somewhere.
Right.
Where someone's like not being fully honest about their feelings or avoiding certain topics or easily triggered by things, whatever the symptoms are that someone's not willing to calmly lean in, make eye contact, sit down, put down what they're doing, and address your feelings. I mean, yes, if that conversation's happening like all the time, it might get tiresome. But if it's every once every few months, he should be able to like provide you some reassurance in like a kind and loving way.
Right. No, that's very good advice. I thought of a different angle, and I was wondering your,
yeah, sure,
your take on it. So let's say I think that yours is a great first step and even second step. And I think that like, maybe she'll always have a little bit in the back of her head of like this thought of like, this could happen. I could be, you know, anyone is capable of this. I'm whatever. It's always possible. Maybe. Right. Mm-hmm. What if she did a little bit of like aversion therapy, or I don't, that's probably not the right word, of like, all right, like here's the fear. Instead of like running away from it, let's like move towards it. Let's think let's approach the monster in my dreams. What's the worst that could happen here? What's the fear? He's cheating on you like the whole time, and like it's embarrassing and it's awful and it's whatever. And then what?
Yeah.
And then you leave. And then you're fine, just like you were before. Like, and then, okay. So this is always a possibility.
Yes.
And I know that I'll be okay.
Yes. And on top of that, you going to his house, driving by his house, is not going to stop him from cheating. It might make you know about it sooner, but it's not going to make it any better if it's happening, or make it feel any better because you figured it out instead of someone else telling you, or it's not really going to minimize the pain. But yeah, I agree with that. That's a, if this really feels like this compulsive rumination that like you bring it up to him, he reassures you, like that might be step three, right? Like,
right.
You try the other things, you've brought it up to him, he's reassuring you, it's not helping. Then you might, I agree. That's a great step.
Like a radical like, acceptance.
Yes. Almost. Yes. Yes. Love it. Totally. Yeah. I'm going to just, and what I think I've talked about this on here before, if this was a patient of mine, I would have them like write down that entire scenario, the worst case fear, write it down, read it over 10 times. He's cheating on me. It's with this person that I think it's with, you know, everyone else, whatever your biggest fear is, like everyone else knows but me, like, you know, whatever the thing is that you're, I mean, don't make up something just to, but like within reason of what you're actually thinking about that's like scaring you, read it over 10 times and just keep listening to it over and over and over again until it almost becomes like a little boring and you're like, okay.
It's like the opposite of manifesting.
Yeah. Well, it feels like you're manifesting him cheating on you by doing that. But like, that's bullshit. And that's not what's happening.
No, I think you're like manifesting like a belief that you will be okay no matter what happens to you in any scenario.
Yes. Yeah. You know? Because what's keeping you continuously thinking about this is the fact that you get activated when he doesn't text you. And then he texts you and then you feel calm.
Right.
So it's like you need this reassurance from him when he texts you back to calm you, instead of you taking control of calming yourself by like stimulating this activation to the point where it's like your body is no longer going to achieve activation. Cause it, after a while, we just get bored and used to something. So it's no longer that activating. So it's a way of soothing yourself without needing this external thing, like a text from him or an I love you or the right birthday gift or he's coming to your grandma's birthday party. So that means that he's not cheating on you or whatever the thing is that you're going to get from him that makes you feel better.
And I think that like that can work with like anything you become super anxious about. Like I used to have this, I did a little bit of that with like, you know, pregnancy loss where it would be like, you know, you've had a loss before. And then for the next one, you're kind of like overanalyzing everything. I should go to the doctor. I should check this 6 times a day. I should, you know, taking 700 pregnancy tests. But then I think like if you eventually, if you're just kind of like, all right, what's the fear? I lose this baby. And then like, if you do that enough, then it's like, all right, then what happens? Then I'm fine.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Like, yes.
You know, and then it gives you a little bit of a sense of like, again, like the worst that could happen, if it happens, I will be okay.
Yes, totally. That's why one of the reasons, and it's not exactly related to the pregnancy loss thing, but maybe sort of, is like the best thing that you can do for yourself is try to achieve peace and serenity alone.
Right.
Or like for you, like without the baby, or for someone else, like without the doctor, the boyfriend. Right. Yes.
Like, you know, yeah. Like telling you that, you know, that someone else telling you it's going to be right. In this case, it's like the, I think the doctor's like the boyfriend, like, okay, we'll look and we'll, you're fine.
Right.
And then you know, you freak out about something else. You're
right.
Fine. Or you're not like.
Totally. You know. Yeah. And it's true. I think if you can, and then you can tell yourself like, I was okay before this. And like, I'll be okay. Like you said, the end result is sort of like, I was okay before I was pregnant and I'll be okay if right. I am again, not pregnant.
Yeah. And if this guy cheats on you, you're going to be like very upset. It's going to be very upsetting, but it will pass.
Yes. Yeah.
You'll love again, just like she did this time.
Totally. Resilience is a superpower. So like the only way to get real resilience is to be forced into these loss situations. And once, you know, depending on how you handle the loss, it's not about avoiding the loss situations. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really build resilience. Resilience is built by experiencing the loss and then realizing, okay, that was really hard. I cried a lot. I spent 3 days like not wanting to get out of bed or socialize. I isolated. I did whatever I did for a period of time. And then I came out of it and I trust that that will happen, you know, next time. And that probably is the case for you with pregnancy loss, where it's kind of like, okay, like it really sucks. It's really, really bad and really depressing and really hard. But I, you know, you kind of get to a point where you're like, I know that I can handle this.
Right. And I'll be okay.
Yeah.
At the end. Like you said, like if you said this in like an earlier episode, like riding the wave, if you can like ride the waves of like uncertainty, that's sort of like the key to happy life.
Yes. And when it get the way that that wave ends up, which a lot of is what a lot of people are scared of. They're scared of the wave turning into a tidal wave that like destroys them, is to like steer clear of the narrative of like, if this guy cheats on you, then not allowing yourself to get into the narrative of like, oh, there's something wrong with me that everybody's cheating on me and I'll never find a person. This is just a wave. It's painful right now. It will pass. Don't turn it into a storyline. It's just a moment in time. So,
yeah. And I think we try to make meaning out of things. So
yes.
It's like a natural human tendency. So I get the urge, but you know, and it takes a lot of practice. I think it's not something you're going to get like immediately. So give yourself a little grace.
Hopefully this helps.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Stuart Betches, do you want to read it?
I'll read this. Hi, Jordana and Dr. Naomi. Love the pod and all the things you discuss. I wanted to write in to see if you could offer some advice. One of my closest friends has a 2-year-old child, and both her and her husband work as nurse practitioners. They aren't the best planners and don't have a step babysitter or nanny, and this leads to them asking me and other childless friends to watch their child for free for hours at a time. The last time I said yes, I spent 6 hours watching him on a Sunday. I work throughout the week and actually travel quite a bit for work, so when I'm home, I like to relax and enjoy my time. I know they don't have any family help, but it bothers me that they think their friends are willing to use their free time to help them out. This has led me to be scared to text her with the fear that she's going to ask me. How can I address this without being rude? Her and her husband are also very sensitive, and I don't want to come off as being inconsiderate to their situation, but also they chose to have a child. I know this comes across as selfish, but do we have an obligation as friends to babysit? Any advice is, of course, greatly appreciated. Thank you.
This is an interesting one. I feel like if you just say no enough times, someone usually internalizes that you're not going to be the person to go to for these kinds of things. And right. You don't usually have to make it into like a whole statement on them asking you or what they're choosing to do.
Yes, I agree. And I think it, you know, I think it's nervy. I have 3 kids. I don't think that I would ask a friend repeatedly, maybe once if I'm like, have to take myself
right,
to the hospital.
If it was an emergency.
Right. Like if it's an emergency to offer to ask someone to just like, you know, babysit repeatedly, a friend especially. So they are kind of not being the most considerate of your experience. And I do think that you can just be honest, not like what you're saying, not honest and like, I have to tell a whole story about this, but just like,
right.
Yeah, I was actually just really looking forward to relaxing on my Sunday. I'm sorry, I can't do it.
That's a tough one to say. I would make up some sort of other excuse, but like yours is the right way to go.
Or I'm just feeling really drained today. I just really need a day to myself. I think that she needs, because otherwise, you're then like flat out lying, right? Like, I don't know what you would say. Yeah. Like, I have a manicure
appointment,
but what you don't. And then it's like, now you're actually like lying, which never really feels great. And I, as like, again, as someone who has kids, like I would appreciate, and I do appreciate, and I have asked people to babysit. I've asked my siblings to babysit. And when they say, I'd rather them just say, no, like, I just really don't, I'm not. You know, I wanted to, not, I don't, I mean, I don't want to would feel, but like, I just want a day to myself or something like that. That would feel okay to me. Like, I get it. I want a day to myself too.
And if they said that, and if they said that enough times, you might be like, all right, I'll probably not ask this person.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think you have a choice. You could either be honest and just be like, I really needed to just relax on my own today. I had a stressful week. Maybe saying you had a stressful week is like a little white lie if you didn't have a stressful week. But I wouldn't make up the existence of an entire appointment that didn't exist or like another plan that's like not happening. Because then, I don't know. For me personally, just like flat out lying never feels great.
Well, I mean, it's all kind of a lie, right? Because it's like, you're her just being like, I don't really want to watch your kids like ever is like really what she's, I mean, it's kind of what she like is means, right? It's not really about wanting the day to herself. I guess it is, but it's like, I think she's like, I don't even want to have to like come up with an excuse for this. I don't even think I should be asked.
Right.
Like,
I mean, look, it sounds like this listener would be happy to watch the kid for like 2 hours, maybe if they had to run to the supermarket, right? But it's like when it's 6 hours, it's your whole day. It's eating up your whole 2 days off. It's eating up one of your whole 2 days off. And it's happening repeatedly. That's what I think is bothering her more than like,
once right. every 3 months she watches the kid for That's like true. A couple of hours, I don't think she would care. But I do agree that if she kept saying no, or even honestly, if she was just like, no, I can't today. Sorry.
Right.
I hope you can find somebody.
Yeah.
And then if
probably
she
wouldn't
pushes,
ask why.
Right. And then if she pushes, then you can be honest.
That's a good one. I can't today. Yeah. For some reason, it feels very hard to say I can't today.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like it shouldn't, right?
No, I think it's totally. I get this, listener. You have 2 days off. You, even if your plan was to vegetate on the couch and order right. it taken, you know, take out food,
that's
whatever,
right.
that's your choice. And I think they're abusing this privilege. And I'm sure the friends are like, oh my God, we love the kids. We love the kids. Like, so they're like, oh, this might be fun for them.
Right.
And I've yeah. definitely done that, like with our siblings, where they're like, you know, I wouldn't necessarily pay them because they're like, oh, they love them. These are their nieces and nephews. Like, this is fun right. for them, or they enjoy
usually,
this time.
There's probably offered at some point. I would right. imagine it was offered before it was asked.
Yes. Yes.
I think that's
exactly.
the other part. Like, I'd love to let me know if you need a babysitter. I'm around anytime.
Someone yeah.
Like, someone who says that would be the person you would probably call in the first instance.
Yes. Or if what you really want is not like a last minute, because she's saying like they're not great at planning. So you might, if you want, another option is to say, I can't today, but I'm available on May 23rd, Saturday night, if you guys want to go out to dinner. Like, offer what you're willing to do, if you're willing to do it, and be like,
right, if
which
she
is
yeah.
setting the tone of like, I'm open to doing this with like several weeks in advance and an exact plan, if that's what you're right. open to. But yeah, I think if she says no enough times, hopefully they'll stop asking her. And I don't think you're selfish for not having anything to do and not wanting to watch someone else's kids for free too. Like, the other thing is, you can also, you know, I think it's very reasonable to offer to pay somebody to watch your kids.
Is that a friend?
I guess it depends what their situation is. Like, if they're looking for extra money and you'd have to right. pay a babysitter anyway.
Yeah. But, no, it's true. Yeah. I mean, to ask for free for many hours at a time is very near. It would at least feel a little less insulting, I guess, if they asked with an offer. Or maybe it would be more insulting. I don't know.
That's more awkward for you to be like, yeah, if you pay yeah. me. I think the answer is just right. like, I can't today. Sorry.
I can't today.
Yeah.
And it's funny. Why do you think people have such a hard time like saying, I can't today, and feeling the need to, and again, I'll speak for myself, come up with a lie.
Yeah. Like, I think you're aware that maybe it feels like a rejection, or you're not being helpful. You know, it's right. almost like.
But even if someone asked me for plans and I like didn't feel like doing them, I would feel like I wanted to come up with like
an excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. I think it will become more normal, especially with like Gen Z on the rise, to just be like, not in the mood to socialize today.
Like, nope.
That's how I feel, which is like how a lot yeah. of people feel when they want to say no. Like, if your friend asks you for plans, it's not that you don't like her. It's just that
if someone said that to me, I think they were like depressed or something.
Yes. Or like, yeah, there's
it shuts down the conversation when you just have like an excuse that's tangible, that feels like, oh, I'm getting lunch with my mom. Like, just feels like, okay, now we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Right. Then maybe there is a fear of judgment, like that there's something mm-hmm. wrong with you. You're socially isolating.
Or it's insulting.
Yeah. You're like afraid of rejecting them, you know, right. that they will feel rejected, which is why sometimes I think saying no and then saying, but how about this alternative time?
Right.
Softens it a little bit.
Do you ever lie about things that you don't want to go to?
I don't think I would make up like a thing that actually wasn't happening, because I think I have a fear of like, what if somebody would find out that.
Yeah.
Like, I would say something like, I had a really long day, you know, it's this, I really can't go tonight, or I just can't, you know, it's not going to work tonight. Or that's another thing people say. It doesn't, like, I try to make a lot of plans for the kids, and sometimes the parents will be like, today doesn't work.
Okay.
That's like,
that makes today doesn't work is a good one.
Yeah. Which is just kind of like, there's something else that I have planned, whether it's like nothing or everything. Today doesn't work. Sorry. How about next weekend? If that's something you want to offer.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. It is weird that we all feel so uncomfortable because it just feels like a rejection and you don't want to hurt your friend's feelings, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I've read that people lie, like, I think it's like 2 to 4 times a day.
Oh, wow.
It's like the average amount that the average person lies. And it's not like huge lies, but it could be anything from like, I don't know. How was the food? It was great.
Right.
Like,
okay. So yeah, if you're counting, like if someone, you know, cooks
like a white lie
and you're like, oh, this was, how was it? Oh, it was really good.
Mom, what do you think of my new painting?
Right.
That I brought home.
Yes. Right. If it's like a lie about like a feeling that's sort of subjective, then, and it's inside my body, then yeah, fine. I could see that. But if it's a lie about like, I have an appointment when I don't, or like, right, you know, something I'm expecting.
Something that can be disputed in court.
I'm expecting a delivery when I'm really not, or whatever. That to me feels like, that just feels like once you start doing that, then you're like dancing in like, you know, just like liar territory. Like if you get comfy right with just making up stuff that's like just not true, if you get too comfy with that, I don't think that's great.
That's true. That's a good point. I'm going to do that less if I can.
So it's very, it's Jordana's very hard. Friends out there, whatever she tells you she's doing is complete bullshit.
It's a lot. I'm usually down for most things. I usually say yes.
Right.
But when I don't, I do feel like the need to come up with an excuse. And if I don't have one, I confess to occasionally making one up.
All right. I forgive you.
But it's good advice. I'm going to rethink that.
Today
we live and we learn and we grow.
Today doesn't work. I can't today. Sorry.
Can't
How
today.
About next Thursday?
I mean, I can today is still a lie if you can. She can.
Yeah, I guess.
She doesn't want to. Today is not good.
Right.
That's a better one.
That's a better one.
I mean, if we're looking into like the true facts of it, today is also a lie.
Well, I can't today because I have plans with my couch.
Some intentions. Okay. Hi, ladies. I've been listening to Oversharing since the jump, and it is always a highlight of my week. I love commenting aloud to discuss the triggered scenarios you talk about as if I'm in the room with you, but that's a mental issue for another time. Oh, well. My husband is in the military, and we've just received the news that his next station will be in Germany. We are, of course, thrilled because we've never lived outside the U.S., so we're so excited about this new adventure. With that said, I'm a terribly nervous traveler, especially on planes. To add to my anxiety that's already starting to build surrounding figuring out the logistics of our move, we have 2 Doberman Pinschers. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
I think so. Mm-hmm. That will have to fly in the belly of the plane in order to come to Germany with us. Them not coming with us is not an option. These dogs are my babies and I won't be going anywhere without them. Okay. My older dog is also a nervous traveler. He hates the car, so I can only imagine how traumatized he will be flying in a plane, in the cargo hold, in a crate, for a roughly 7-hour flight. Not to mention that he is a senior dog, so travel in general is going to be harder for him to begin with. Anytime my husband and I talk about our travel plans, my mind starts to race, and I think about all the things that could go wrong with our travels, especially on the plane. It drives my husband nuts that I hyperfixate on the dogs when it comes to our travel discussions, as he understandably is super excited to plan the road trip across the country to get to the airport we're flying out of, as well as to move someplace new. I would greatly appreciate an intention I can use to calm myself down when my mind gets stuck racing through all the things that could go wrong during our travels. My dogs are my whole world, and thinking about the stress they'll have to endure on our move makes me sick to my stomach. But at the same time, I want to be able to enjoy our trip and the travels that will take us to our new home. I'm open to any suggestions and would love all the feedback. Thanks, anxious dog mom of an anxious dog.
I validate this. I really do. I think the idea of having to put your dog underneath the plane for 7 hours does not sound fun. They're not going to like it. And you're not going to like it. And it's going to be stressful. The question is, how do you stop like ruminating about it?
Because it's going to be stressful the day of, but it doesn't have to be stressful every day until then.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of these things where it's like resilience. Like they're not going to like it. It's not going to be the best 7 hours of their life. It's not going to be the best 7 hours of your life. She sounds like her mind is made up that this is how they're going to do it. I don't think there is another way to travel with large dogs other than this. I think maybe you can take like a boat.
Can you take a, like a cruise to Germany with a...
Maybe there, you'd probably have to like go somewhere else in Europe first and then take the dogs in a car or on a train. Like, I don't really think there's viable other options. So yeah, this is going to be hard.
When you say traumatized, I guess, or when she says traumatized, like, I assume that like dogs do this all the time, that people do this with their dogs all the time. And like most of the dogs turn out fine, right?
Right.
I mean, it's uncomfortable, I'm sure, for all the dogs, but at the end of the day, they get off the plane, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
Is that helpful? I don't know.
I guess the fear is, because I'm a dog parent, and I guess the fear is, I would guess, the fear for me would be that the dog is then like traumatized to where they become like anxious or nervous or like that almost like... The same way, like you wouldn't take like a child and put them under the plane in a crate for 7 hours. And if you did, they'd probably need like some psychotherapy and some like treatment after that to like recover from this traumatic thing where they were like separated for 7 hours in like a noisy, you know, under the belly of a plane where they don't know what's happening, how long they're going to be in there. It's like very disorienting. Right. Like, I think that's the fear of like why almost like nobody would do that to a child who doesn't understand, or like a baby who has no comprehension of what's happening. With a dog, you can't be like, okay, here's what's happening. We're going to Germany. It's going to take 7 hours. Just relax. You know, it's like all of a sudden everyone's gone and they're like in this thing and they have no idea.
Scared. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Scared.
Can you sedate them?
You know,
is that an option?
My initial thought was just knock them out. Put them under, not under, like, you know, like, or, you know, sedate them, like you said.
Yeah,
and then they
saying.
Won't remember the whole thing. And then they'll skip the trauma. But I think apparently it's dangerous to do that. And some airlines won't even take your dog if it appears to be sedated. So.
Okay.
That's a bummer.
I didn't know that.
Because I thought it could just be like, all right, if you just kind of knock them out and sedate them, then maybe they won't remember the whole thing and then they won't be traumatized. But I don't think that's an option.
You'd think it would be like almost easier for the airline if they were sedated so that they would give them less. I imagine they're like very annoying if they're very scared and traumatized. They're probably like barking and freaking out.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not a vet, but I think there's something about like... when you sedate them, it increases risks for, like, they don't want the dogs to die either, like on their watch. So there's some risk. So first,
and they're in the air.
Yeah. First of all, what I would do is I would talk to your vet and I would let her, him or her know like what you're feeling and what your plan is and see what you can do. Because I do think there might be something like what they have in humans where it's almost like a dog antidepressant. But I don't think that's something you can give the day of. I think you have to probably plan in advance, which just might make them a little less anxious, or like a, some kind of an anti-anxiety medication that's not
beta blocker.
Yes. Yeah, something that might be able to make them a little bit less anxious. So I would talk to your vet about that, like this whole scenario, if it's making you nervous, find out what your options are. And then I think you have to realize, and this is where all the validating, so like validated, because I would feel the same way. Like I even feel bad if I leave for a trip and I have to, you know,
board them or something.
Board them, exactly. Where it's not like the scary, noisy, you know, plane sounds and whatever. So I get it. But she sounds like she loves her dogs a lot. It sounds like they've gotten their whole lives filled with love and care and thoughtfulness and all the things. And it sounds like the second she gets them out, it's going to be a beautiful moment. You're going to reunite. You're going to be fine. They're going to hug you. They're going to, I was going to say, hug you and kiss you. They're going to jump on you and they're going to lick you and they're going to like be with you again. And then you're going to give them the rest of their lives with all of the love and the goodies. So I think if you could just remember that this is, that these few hours of them being scared is not going to undo their entire lives of what they've seen every day, getting love and, you know, and all that good stuff. So that, I mean, that was like the intention that I wrote for her to help keep her a little grounded, was the security and love they've been given their whole lives cannot be undone in 7 hours. That to me is what the fear is, that like they're suddenly going to become traumatized and like different dogs and like nervous and never want to leave. You know, they've been shown, I could tell she loves them a lot. They've been shown a lot of love. They will be shown a lot of love, and you're not going to undo that in a 7 hour flight. So maybe that can keep you a little bit calm in combination with talking to your vet and seeing if you can get them medicated somehow. That might help.
That's good advice. Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck.
Let's do some triggers. Do you want to read the first one?
Hi, Jordana and Dr. Naomi. I just finished listening to this week's episode and decided to write in with a triggered scenario regarding a friend's birthday party and a Venmo charge. My friend texted our group chat a few weeks ago asking when everyone was free to celebrate his birthday. After we all shared availability, he sent a link to a cocktail bar and said he'd reserved a table for next Friday night to come by for drinks. When I got to the bar, my friend said there was no table service, so to just go get drinks at the bar, which I happily did and closed out my tab before I left. There were no group food orders or anything else shared that I could tell. A couple days later, he sent me a Venmo request for, quote, the birthday party. Because I can't think of anything else, I'm assuming this charge is for reserving the table. But even that doesn't quite make sense to me because it wasn't a club with bottle service, just a table where we all gathered with the drinks we got at the bar. And if we all paid this amount to reserve it, that would just be exorbitant. I'm not terribly triggered. I paid the charge because it isn't worth an awkward conversation, but it felt a little icky to me. I'd love your take on this and the Venmo culture generally. This isn't the first time I think I'm being invited to a party as a guest and then requested to pay for something that wasn't discussed prior. Thanks for all that you do, the dreaded surprise Venmo.
I'd like to start maybe playing devil's advocate for the guy. I feel like maybe there was, even if there wasn't table service, that he had maybe like a bar tab, or like he opened a tab at the bar and people were getting drinks on the tab and he just assumed everyone was getting drinks on the tab and maybe Venmo'd everyone that way. That would be my initial thought. Okay,
that she just opened her own, got her drink, closed it, and everyone else was like putting the drinks on this collective tab unbeknownst to her.
Right. Because she didn't say, her friends didn't say, oh, there's no table. They didn't say that there's no bar tab. They said there's no table service, which means people weren't going to, but it doesn't mean that there weren't people all getting drinks under one tab at the bar.
Right.
Potentially.
Have you seen that before?
Usually it's at a table when someone, there's like one big check, but I have seen like people start a bar tab and then maybe like you look at it at the end and assume like, oh, everyone is sort of put it on your name.
Right. Right.
And then like, the guy's probably like, okay, everyone, I'll just split it among everyone because I'm not going to calculate who got what drinks. And I'll just assume everyone at the bar got a drink or two, or one person got one drink, one person got three. Or I think it's a possibility that was the case.
I can see that being possible. If she's listening to this and that's me, I would definitely like text a friend and kind of be like, hey, at that party, did you pay for your drink or did you?
Right. Was there a tab?
Because I would just be curious.
Did you put it under?
Like if that, because it seems like there's then an answer to this question, if that's the case, which I guess does make sense. Possibly.
Yeah, it is annoying. I could see how it's annoying where she's like, I bought my own stuff and now I'm being charged for like the communal things. But that could also, if that's the case, she could also text the guy and be like, hey, I actually wound up getting my own tab. So I wasn't, if she cares enough to make a thing of it, which is totally fine. Like she could say, I actually got my own tab. So I wasn't really involved in the bar tab.
Yeah, which is kind of putting it out there. Like I'm assuming this is for the bar tab, in which case he would be like, no, actually it's not the bar tab. It's for the table. And then table reservation.
I mean, yeah. And if there was a table reservation, I think it is a little weird to charge people, but.
So that's my other question is like, what do you think the etiquette is? If you're throwing yourself a birthday party and you pay, you're paying a table reservation fee and inviting people, do you think that it's okay to ask people to split that with you? Or do you think it's your birthday, you're throwing the party, you pay for the table if you want that?
I think it's okay to ask people to split that with you, but I think you need to ask in the invitation. I think you need to make that clear in the invitation so that people know what they're getting into. If there's a charge for the, because it's like, and again, I think this depends on how old you are. I think the older you get, the less socially acceptable it is to do that. But, you know, when you're, if you're like 22 and everyone's broke and you're kind of like, you know, it's hard to get a table at this restaurant. You kind of have to pay like a minimum or a reservation fee or whatever it is. I want to do my birthday here. It's $35 a person, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Like, if you guys want to come, would love to have you. Like, to me, if you're young and that's like what you want to do for your birthday and you're letting everyone know ahead of time, anyone who doesn't want to do that
totally
cannot come. I think you do have to tell people, though.
I agree with that. Yeah, I think that you can do whatever you want. You just have to ask people in advance. But I think if you don't put it out there and you don't,
you should pay for it.
Like, if you're not putting it out there and that there's a fee for whatever it is, then like, it's just, I think it's safe to be assumed that you are going to cover that, the cost of reserving that table.
I think a lot of these things are kind of almost like wedding things. It's like every sort of like sub friend group or subculture has its own sort of like way that they do things a little bit. Like, you know, in some weddings, the bride pays for the hair and makeup for everyone. In some weddings, like in some groups, like that's not really like people get it themselves if they want it. In some, you know, at some group birthday dinners, the birthday person pays for the dinner. In some birthday dinners, everyone pays for the birthday person.
Right. I was just going to say, I like the idea of if you expect people to chip in, you should let them know ahead of time. I like that protocol.
For sure. I think for my like 25th or even 30th birthdays, I did like, okay, I'm doing a birthday wine tour. Like, it's $150 a person. It includes this. Let me know if you're interested. In which case, like, again, it's like, I'm organizing this. It's my birthday, but I'm not paying for it.
Right.
I'm 25.
Right.
But,
or even honestly, even if you're 35 or 45, if you're doing a birthday wine tour, I don't think there would ever be an expectation unless you're just like, have a ton of money to throw around that you would just be treating everybody to a birthday wine tour, like a wine tour for $150 a person. That seems excessive. And if you do, you know, you could kind of almost put that out there too, like my treat, no worries or something.
Right.
Like,
yes, agreed. I think it should either should be put out there like, this is what I'm paying for, if anything, and this is how much it is if you're attending, if not. That's like, I think the correct etiquette. And I've had friends do come to this restaurant for my birthday. Like, I'm covering the food. You guys just get your own drinks or something like that. Like, whatever it is, it could be whatever combination that you yourself are comfortable with. But I do think it should be put out there. But I do think in this scenario, it could be just like a bar tab, like a tab that he wound up paying for, that everyone was under, that maybe you just didn't get the memo that everyone was putting it under this thing. It could be an honest mistake. I would ask, I agree, someone else that was at the birthday party, like what the deal was. And it's possible it could all just be fixed by you saying like, hey, I actually wound up getting my own.
And then he'll have to like kind of tell you what was up. I could see though why she's confused, because I would be shocked if you pay to reserve a table. It kind of assumes that you get like a waiter or a waitress for the table. Like I would like literally just paying for an actual table, like that seems crazy with like no service at all. I guess some bars might do that, but
I agree, unless it was like a club or something. I don't know, like usually you get bottle service, you get some sort of service
what you're paying for. And it does, how much, you know, like one waitress to like bring over, waiter to bring over a few, to bring over the drinks. Or
I think the amount will also tell you, like if it seems like it's just enough to cover his drinks. That would probably be like obvious. If it's like a large number, it'd be like, where is this coming from?
She said it seems exorbitant that it would be just to rent the table, like with no drinks included. So I think you're right.
Right.
I think there was a bar tab that you didn't know about, because the whole thing seemed like a little bit confusing. And if you, she's not going to do it because she said she's not going to do it. And I probably wouldn't either, but I do think it would be totally fine for you to say, just so you know, like just letting you know, like, I bought my own drinks that night. So I wasn't part of the bar tab, and then seeing what he has to say. But sometimes it's best to just let it lie. And then maybe on your birthday, he buys you some drinks or whatever the, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. What would you give? What would you give this?
I need to know what the charge was. I think that matters, right? If it was like,
right.
I don't know. If it was more than $100, it's kind of triggering if you didn't really get anything for your $100. Yeah.
Sign up for that. Yeah. I'd give it like a 4.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Okay. It sounds like it was a misunderstanding, though. I kind of agree with you. So that would bring it down. But right. At face value, I'd give it a 4.
Yeah. I think there was a bar tab you didn't know about. There were probably like 20 people there. He probably charged, and maybe like 18 of them got the drinks, but he didn't know who didn't. So,
right. Or like, everyone. I could see it's triggering if there were 20 people there and he was collecting $100 from each one. You're like,
happy birthday to him. I'm sure it went towards paying for something.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't you think he's just charging you to get paid birthday gift?
If he's your friend, unless he's a sociopath, he's charging. He had something that he paid for. You're probably right. All right, moving on.
I'd give it a 4 though. It's annoying. It's just like an annoying thing to have to deal with. To be like, I didn't.
I agree. Wasn't discussed.
Kind of feel like annoying.
I agree. Wasn't discussed prior is the key sentence.
Yes, he should say. Come, I got it. I didn't get any bottle service. It's everyone, you know, I'm putting all the drinks under my name. If you get something there, I'll just Venmo everyone at the end.
Communication is key.
Exactly. All right. I'll do our last triggered. Hi, Jordana and Dr. Naomi. Thank you for all that you do. I'm writing in with a triggered scenario. My company has increased return to office 3 days a week. I don't love it, but I'm surviving. My team is lucky enough to have a spot near the window. If I must be at an office, I'm at least thankful for a little natural light. Recently, a seat opened up directly next to the window, and our new team lead decided to declare it for herself. This was mildly annoying because it shows a lack of regard for others on the team who might have wanted the seat, but whatever. Seniority and status wins, I guess. However, since switching to the window seat, she has been continuously pressing the button to close the blinds, shutting the whole team off from getting to enjoy the natural light. Why take the window seat if you don't like the sunshine? I feel like I can't say anything because I'm lower on the ladder, but I'm incredibly irritated to the point where I'm unable to stop thinking about how I'm sitting under gross fluorescent lights on a beautiful sunny day. I know this sounds dumb, but it's impacting my ability to focus.
I validate this.
What do you think?
I like my natural light. I think if there's a window, it should be open. This is my personal preference. Like I just love getting light in. I'd want to sit near the window. I'm always that person. So personally, I validate, like, it would irk me too. You're going to sit by the window and then close the blinds. I get it. This is annoying.
Right. Yeah, it's annoying to declare that seat. I wonder if there's like a glare or something, or like some sort of maybe reason why someone sitting next to the window would want the window closed. Like maybe the sun is getting in her eye. I don't know. Like
probably is getting in her eyes. So like pick a different seat. I think she's just aloof. Maybe she just sat there, not necessarily for the window. I think this listener could say next time, as soon as she pushes the button to close the blinds, she could say, hey, I actually don't mind the sun. I really like it. If you want, we could switch and I'll sit by the window. Like, I'd love to switch, sit by the window. And then she's either going to be like,
yeah,
no, I actually like sitting by the window, but only when it's closed, which is weird.
Which is weird, sure. Yeah.
Like, actually, it's really in my eyes.
Right. She'd probably say, like, sure, just so you know, like, the sun definitely gets in your eyes, but I'm happy to switch.
So I think next time she pushes that button is your perfect opportunity to offer her a switch and see what she says.
Yeah. Sometimes it gets really hot when you sit in front of a window.
No, I mean, some people might not like it, and she might switch to the window seat and be like, oh, and now I know why she was closing the blinds. because it is getting hot or the sun is right in my eyes or it's creating a glare on my computer screen or whatever it is. Maybe there's a legit reason, but.
So it's, I guess the trigger is if it's triggering that she closes the blinds after taking the window seat. I'd give that a 4 as well.
I would give it like a 5.5 because I've like, okay, sometimes even on the plane, like I like to look out the window. So if I'm like sitting either in the middle or the aisle next to someone who has a window, I'm kind of like, you open the window? Like, I'd like to just like.
But then why don't you get the window seat?
Because I usually book late or whatever. Like, I do like the window seat. But then you have to ask if you want to go to the bathroom, which is annoying. Like, people get up. So there's pros and cons. But
I like the window seat because I don't like the light. Like, and I like being the one who gets to control it.
Yeah. Yes. Totally. So like, you have really have no right. But I'm sort of like, ah, it's a little depressing in here with all the lights, all the windows closed.
It's much nicer to be in the aisle when the window seat, when the window is open in the window seat, actually, than it is in the window seat, right. I think. It's like quite hot against the, mm-hmm. Yes, as someone who books in advance,
yes,
and often closes the window seat, I'm like, it's too hot. I need to like close
it. I get it. But as someone who relates to a lover of natural light coming in, almost at all times, I see why this is annoying. Ask her to switch. She might just be, she might have just sat there because she just sat there, not even thinking about it. So maybe she'll be happy to switch with you.
Right. She might deeply regret her choice. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. All right. Well, we did it.
We did it. Keep us posted. Give us some updates. Until next time, that's our time.
Great work today. Oversharing is produced by Sean Kilby. Editing by Jazz Zapatos. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. And send your emails to oversharing@betches.com. Thank you to our sponsor, First Response. A lot of us test more than once. That's why First Response created the Triple Check Pregnancy Test Kit, which includes 3 different tests all in one box. The kit includes the early results pregnancy test, 1 digital pregnancy test, plus 1 rapid result pregnancy test that gives you fast results in just 1 minute on the day of your missed period or any day thereafter. Each test in the kit offers a different way to learn your results, so when the time comes, you feel as confident as possible. All First Response pregnancy test products are available for purchase at all major retailers in-store and online. Be sure to pick one up today. Betches.